Welcome to the For Narcotics Anonymous podcast. Here we share audio recordings of NA members sharing their experience, strength, and hope. If you are a drug addict or think you have a drug problem, you are welcome to attend an NA meeting. Go to www.nahelp.org/meetings to find a meeting near you. On this website, you will also find more information about the Narcotics Anonymous program. Thanks for listening to this recording.
I don't like these things either, but that's all right. I don't have a big time drug-a-log. I can't talk to you about the yard. I can't tell you about all my jail time. I can't tell you about all the hospitals I was in. That wasn't the nature of my addiction. That wasn't my pattern. I was never arrested or hospitalized. I just got loaded every day for 15 years. And I don't have a big time war story. No, I really don't. I started using when I was 7, 8 years old, thereabouts, medically, because I was a fat kid. And they started giving me uppers, and I got so jacked up behind the uppers that, you know, by the time I was 10 years old, I was taking uppers, downers, and tranquilizers daily. I got into high school and found out about other drugs. And that's the story of my addiction. And I used it. I got off heavy off into speed. I got heavy off into psychedelics. You know, I had one heroin run that lasted about 2.5 years. And it whipped my ass. You know, that's all there is to it. You know, one of my favorite sayings around the program is that one they've got on a bumper sticker, that I didn't quit, I surrendered. And that's really where it was at for me. I liked what the guy said when he said he was tired when he came, because I identify with that strongly. I was just tired. And you know, it wasn't the big things. It wasn't like going out and, you know, ripping somebody off. It wasn't taking the guy out on the corner and breaking his wrists because he burned me. It wasn't getting dumped out of the back of the car because my partners thought I was dead, you know, and waking up on a Mulholland, you know, next day and walking back in. It wasn't those things, because those things I could talk about. Those things were glamorous. For me, it was the insidious things that got me here. You know, the ripping my grandmother off, huh? You know, for her food money. You know, selling bunk to, you know, my partner. You know, the people I was tight with, man, burning them for a dime bag. The things I had to do to stay loaded. And I never got off heavy into the ripping and running. You know, my pattern was I had a half a dozen people strung out, and when they copped, I copped. You know, when they got a spoon, I got a spoon. And I got to the point where I could no longer continue to live the way I was living. You know, everybody comes to this program for the same reason, because their life is unmanageable, like it says in the first step. And I really believe that. Either we've come to the decision, you know, I came to the decision that I could no longer live the way I was living. But, you know, sometimes other people, wives, judges, POs, they make that decision for us. And, you know, it's either 9 months in a drug recovery house or, you know, 5 years in the joint. And we'll go for the 9 months every time, you know. If you're here and you've been around a little while and you're not sure, you're in a world of trouble, you know. Because you'll find out that this thing works. And you may never be able to use again the way you used to. I've bought this program. You know, I came here tired. I came here kicking. I came here, you know, hating myself every time I fixed a little bit more. You know, I didn't want to use. And the first thing I remember about this program was the fact that they promised me that I never had to use again against my own will. And that's what I'd been doing for a year. I'd been calling the hotlines, the high lines and stuff for a year. You know, or waiting on the connection to come up with some dollies. I played that game for months and months and months at a time. Huh? Oh, I'll get you some dollies. Months later, I'm still fixing. You know, They're still promises. And I just gave up. No, I just gave up. And I finally got a hold of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know, it was through some answering service somewhere. And they, remember, they asked me, are you qualified for Narcotics Anonymous? And I didn't know what, you know, I wasn't qualified. You know, I just wasn't even qualified to be a human being in my head. Huh? And I made a call, and the guy didn't come get me and didn't take me to a meeting. He just gave me an address, and I couldn't make it, and I didn't go. Then he gave me another address, and that was here in Hollywood. You know, I was the old Yuck and Gower meeting right up the street. And I came to my first meeting in a three-piece black suit and tie, and it took me about 3 to 4 hours to get dressed because I was sick. You know, I was like, oh, somewhere just over 3 days off of a 2.5-year run. And I was sick. And I was afraid, you know. I was very afraid. No one sent me to this program. I don't know about recovery houses. I've been around a lot of them. I've hid out in a lot of them because they were relatively safe compared to the places my head was at. I've seen a lot of people come out of them and stay clean. I've seen a lot of people come out of them and use. You know, it doesn't really matter, I don't think. I never lived in a recovery house. But I did all the same things. I went to meetings every day. I don't remember anything about that first meeting. Except I must have heard something there that brought me back to a second meeting. My second meeting I never made it to. It was the old, it's still going, the Manhattan Beach Friday night meeting. That meeting's been going for years. And me and the old lady left the house at 7 o'clock to drive to that meeting and drove up at 10 minutes to 10. You know, just in time for the prayer to give them our money. And I missed the meeting. But I had a little bit of an awakening that night because, you see, even though I missed the meeting, man, I didn't fix. I didn't fix for like 3 fucking hours out there running around the streets. And I couldn't believe it because I was at the point where I was fixing every couple of hours. And that was amazing to me. And I continued to come to meetings. And I used when I first came around the program twice. Weekends were bad for me. I got a job because it was safe. Actually, I had the job. I went to work about, well, let's see, about 6 months before I cleaned up at this job. I went to work there because my connection worked there. And I could get off at 7 o'clock instead of having to wait until 9. I could cop like a 6:45. And once I was low, it didn't make any difference. I was sitting there putting pieces of metal together in the sink. You know, it didn't really make that much difference. And then I'd hustle, you know, at breaks, at lunch, and run home, which was 10 minutes away and stuff, and come back to work. And, you know, I remember those days well. There's certain, like, little, well, I don't remember them well, but there's certain points that really stick out. I remember that, I just saw it on the TV not too long ago. They were showing the guy stepping down on the moon, and I remember that we were sitting there at work, and they brought a TV in and the whole damn thing, and I nodded out and missed it, and I was really pissed, you know, and I got busted on the job behind it, and they kept me. I still work for that same company. And I've been there over 10 years now. And, you know, I don't know what that has to say about it, but I found out that for me it was okay to be an employee. For me it was okay to be a lot of things I never thought I was. As I said, I came around the program and went to a lot of meetings. This hall kind of reminds me of one of my favorite meetings early because it's in a hospital, and I dig meetings in hospitals. When I first came around, there used to be a meeting in the old Olive View Hospital before the earthquake. And I used to go to that every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. I was living right over here, in fact. This is my area. And I used to drive out there with this broad who I'd been on the streets with. We dealt in competition with each other. We dealt with all the same people the way it turned out. And she'd cleaned up on the program and had a couple months clean when I came around. And we never met on the street. But we started cutting up old touches like we do, and we found out, God damn it, everybody we knew was the same people. And who are you? And we finally figured it out. You know, this is gal that set me up on a forgery beef. Had some snot-nosed kid passing stolen checks using my name. And, you know, thank God I didn't fit the description. I don't know why I never got busted. You know, it's not because of the things I did so much. I was the guy who was always driving up to the connections house and seeing all the cars in front and deciding not to stop, you know, because I knew it wasn't cool. I was the guy who was leaving a half an hour before, you know. I'd got mine, and as I'm driving, turn around the corner, you know, here they come. You know, and I don't understand it. I walked into a bust in the valley. About 68, I opened, knocked on this door, and there were 14 fucking cops in there to bust two people. You know, my drug of choice was morphine, and I had a piece of stuff to trade for morphine. And I walked out of it. I don't know how. You know, I had a lot of things like that in my using. You know, wrecking cars and walking away from them, and not getting busted, and all kinds of things like that. And that's really what it used to be like. I just got up every morning, got loaded, and went about my business of oblivion. You know, I took one look at life as a small kid and decided I didn't want any part of it. And that was the pattern of my using. I learned at a very early age that if you took something, you either were, felt, or acted better. You know, and that was my program. You know, that irregardless of circumstances, if I take something, I'll either feel better, I'll act better, you know, I'll be able to talk to broads, or I'll be able to, you know, pass a test, or whatever it happened to be, you know, or I'll feel better. And, you know, that's the story of my life. I put up this wall between me and reality. I didn't dig reality. And I didn't figure there was any way I could change reality, you know. So I went about the business of trying to change the way I perceived it by keeping my head fucked up. And I came to the program, you know, because I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I don't know why I'm clean today. You know, I've been clean almost 9 years. And I don't know what I did that other people didn't do that are dead. You know, I don't know what I did. I can tell you what I did, and maybe it's little bits and pieces and everything else. You know, I did what I saw the people around here who had time and who had the kind of life I'd like to have. I did what they were doing, which meant going to meetings every day, which meant picking up newcomers, which meant getting involved in institution work, which meant getting involved in NA at a level other than an hour and a half in the evening. You know, I socialized with them. I went places with them. I went on 12-step calls with them. I read what they told me to read. I asked questions, because I had a lot of trouble with the goddamn steps. And I've come to believe that you don't have to work the steps. You don't have to work the steps. I have to work the steps. You know, because this is Greg's program. You know, my program is a personal program, and I found out for me that it's necessary for me to do certain things. And some of those things are work the steps. And I have a lot of trouble working the steps. Not like it used to be when I first came around, you know. I'd goddamn read a step and I could only understand every other word, like it, the, and to, or we. You know, and I didn't understand words like powerlessness, you know, and addiction. I had no idea what addiction was. I've since found out the nature of my addiction. And that's probably been the biggest revelation of all of them. As I continue, the longer I stay clean, the worse I realize that it is, the farther reaching I realize that it is. Because you see, I've been strung out a lot of times clean and sober. You know, I gained 180 pounds my first year and a half around the program. 2 years maybe, I don't know. You know, compulsive eating. In AA, they say you put the plug in the jug and the icebox door flew open. I don't know what it is, But I found that I could ease the pain with food, and I gained a hell of a lot of weight. And it probably saved my life, because I sure as hell wasn't working any steps. You know, and I've gotten strung out on reading. You know, I've got 800-900 science fiction paperback books filling a wall in my goddamn bedroom. And I read almost all of them. Escape. Anything to get me away from reality. I've got 3 ton of rock in the garage. I got off into lapidary and gems and minerals, and I'd sat out there in the freezing fucking cold, grinding my fingers in this water, you know, come in with my hands so cold I can't feel anything, and my fingernails dripping blood because I've ground them all away, and thought everything was okay and that was normal, you know. I've gotten strung out, you know. I put my fucking life on the line for a ham sandwich off the flop truck. I put my life on the line for one more chapter of a book, you know, just one more chapter. And when you're staying up 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 nights in a row, not sleeping because you're reading because you can't put the fucking book down, you know, that's addiction to me. That's part of my addiction. You know, I believe in the threefold addiction, the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual addiction. Physical addiction was kind of easy for me to buy because I was strung out when I came here. And I knew I was physically addicted, and I didn't sleep more than 2 or 3 hours at a time for about 21 days. And, I was a sick boy. You know, I could buy that. I could buy it when people talked about, you know, drugs acting different in their body than they did in the people I used with. You know, I can remember times when we'd go cough and there'd be 3 or 4 of us and everybody'd get down but me. You know, and I'd be saying, this is bunk, you know, and they'd be just, they'd be nodded out. And really, you know, or vice versa, we'd go score some stuff and I'd be nodded out and they'd all be, you know, they wouldn't even be fucking scratching, you know. And they're wondering what the hell's with, and I got loaded as hell off of it. You know, I remember taking uppers and getting down, and taking downers and getting up. One of my favorite tricks was if I could get just the right combination, you know, of morphine and stuff, I could work like hell. God, I could work for hours and hours. That's the only way I ever got my room cleaned, you know. It's the only way I ever got my pad cleaned was if I could just, and it only happened about once every 6 months or so, you know, that I got that, I hit that combination, and I was, you know, I just got off into it, obsessed. You know, and I'd do 3 days work in 4 or 5 hours, you know. And that's not supposed to happen with downers, you know, is it? So I kind of identified with that. And then I started reading, and the one I liked the best, I read an article a couple of years ago when they talked about endomorphs or something like that. But anyway, there's a substance secreted in the body. And they found out that an addict or an alcoholic under the influence doesn't secrete that substance. And that substance is a natural painkiller and tranquilizer. And that an addict under the influence doesn't produce that. So that lack sets up the phenomenon of craving that they talked about. And the funny part about the article was that I think that they went into the fact that this substance is actually produced in the brain. And it didn't make any difference whether or not the alcoholic was loaded on alcohol or the junkie was loaded on stuff. Just something in the act of having your head bad shut down this mechanism, and non-addicts didn't do it. And I said, wow, that's kind of like what I've learned around this program. That's kind of what I've observed. When they say, you know, the X factor, or they, you know, for an allergy, for lack of a better word, you know, and I said, okay. And, you know, I kind of bought it on face value at first. But I buy it. I have a disease which makes it impossible for me to use drugs successfully. And it just doesn't work anymore, you know. I don't know if it's I used to like to compare it to like the allergy to penicillin, where somebody will use penicillin successfully for years and years and years and years, and then they get an infected goddamn finger, or go to the emergency clinic, get a shot of penicillin, and they go into a coma for no apparent reason. They have somehow become allergic to penicillin. And that's the way I figured it, you know. And I might have conned myself in that, but see, it doesn't really matter because that makes it easier for me to stay clean. And I don't mind conning myself a little bit because I found out that it's okay to be clean. The second part of my addiction is the emotional, and that's really what I was talking about when I was talking about getting strung out on, you know, food and reading and rocks and sex and working and not working and going to meetings and not going to meetings and NA business and not NA business and going to institutions and not going to institutions and, you know, all this shit. You know, I found out that for me, that anything that takes me away from reality, anything that I can get off behind, that I can get involved in, you know, I'll run to the gates of insanity and death. Anything to get me away from reality. And that's, you know, that's way down at the heart of my addiction. So that wasn't too hard to buy, but it came afterwards. At first I accepted the physical part, then the emotional part, because somebody told me to look for addiction in my life, and I found it everywhere. You know, I found it, you know, in things like, well, somebody mentioned it tonight, going into a room full of people, well, it was with a birthday party, right? Feeling very, very out of place. You know, I was waiting for you to say you were trying to apologize for yourself for imposing on all these people for coming to the goddamn birthday party, huh? I've felt that way. You know, excuse me for being alive. You know, I've felt that way. I've walked in a room full of people and felt different than everybody. You know, still, you put me in a room with other human beings and I'm in a world of shit. You know, I'm in a world of trouble because I don't relate very well and I don't communicate very well and I'm full of fear. You know, and I have trouble with interpersonal relationships. You know, whether it's with my old lady or whether it's with my boss or whether it's with some drunk on the street, it doesn't seem to matter. You know, you put me in a room with another human being and I've got a serious handicap. And that's part of my addiction. The last part of my addiction I really haven't become aware of. I really didn't start becoming aware of till I was clean quite a while. And that's the spiritual part. And that's probably the furthest reaching and probably the most devastating as far as I'm concerned today. Of course, I'm a ways from a fix. I guess when I first came indoor, the physical was the one that was killing me the quickest. And then the emotional was killing me next week. The spiritual is underlying it all, and it's really a son of a bitch. Lack of faith. The hardest thing for me to do with goddamn almost 9 years is work the third step. It's the hardest thing for me to do. I worked at the steps. I picked up. I got sponsors. I got involved right away. And I did my best, and I tried to work the steps. But, you know, if you really want to pin it down, it took me 5 years to get to the second step. Because I, you know, coming to believe, to me, I found out implies a certain level of trust. I didn't have any. You know, I thought, well, maybe God can restore me to sanity. But I didn't trust the son of a bitch enough to let him try. You know, and I had a surrender about 5 years that was really a ball buster. And I had to give up that too. You know, and then I could really start working the second step. Then I really began to believe that, hey, maybe there really was some hope. Because I really didn't think there was a hell of a lot. Those of you who are in the recovery house talking about being confused and everything, that's all right. You know, I'm still confused most of the time. You know, somebody told me that 90% of the stuff that went through my head the first year was going to be bunk, was going to be bullshit, was going to be insanity, and that my biggest problem was that I couldn't differentiate between the good ideas and the ones that were going to kill me. And I think it's true. And I think after, you know, 8.5 years, it's down to about 70%. Of the stuff that goes through my head is insanity and bunk and out to kill me. And there's about 30% now of valid ideas. Hell, I came to the program with some dynamite ideas and some good ways of living. You know, there's stuff I use today that I brought with me. I remember this shrink taught me how to deal with resentments. And this was, you know, back when I was off into it. And it's the only thing I ever gotten from a shrink. He said, if you feel resentful towards someone or something, ask yourself what you're demanding of that of that object. And it always came out the same answer. You know, I demand that this person not have said what they already said. Or I demand that this person not be the way they are. Or I demand that such and such a situation never have happened. You know, what it is I am demanding that reality and the past to boot not be the way it is. You know, guy can be an asshole and come off the wall and say something I don't like, you know, and I'm capable of hating him for 10 years. You know, that's the nature of my addiction. I remember a kid when I don't know how old I was, 5, 6 years old, I was playing in the front yard and went in the house. And I saw this kid from down the block come up, and he came up in the backyard, in the front yard where I was playing, and he broke all my bows and arrows. And I hated that son of a bitch for at least 10 years. You know, probably longer than that. And every time I saw him, I churned and I loved it. You know, because I love to feel that knot in my gut. You know, I don't enjoy insanity the way I used to. It's still, I get off into it every once in a while because it's familiar. You know, I love to feel that hate, that resentment because I lived with it for so many years, that fear. And it's awful hard for me. It's awful hard for me to cut it loose sometimes. But it doesn't last as long anymore. And I'm not willing to pay that price for as long periods of time as I used to be. And it's good. And the shrink, you know, said, what are you demanding of the object of your resentment? And demand, I found out, was a very, very key word in my illness. You know, I believe, for a long time I said I only have one defect of character. I believe I have two defects of character that affect me in every area of my life. One is I'm self-obsessed. You know, an obsession with self breaks out in lust, greed, envy, sloth, gluttony, in all those areas. I can relate all those shortcomings back to my self-obsession. You know, right now, you know, my back is half-ass out and I've got a cold, right? And I know from experience that when I'm not feeling well physically, that I'm apt to be a hell of a lot more self-obsessed because I'm looking inward, you know, because I'm concentrating on that not feeling good and you know, trying to cop a plea on somebody. They say, hey, you know, give me a look, give me some strokes. You know, man, I played that game well for years. I know I am more subject to insanity when I'm not feeling well physically. You know, God, I work with people and you know, they run down a whole series of things. You know, they busted their foot and lost their old lady and lost their job and they weren't sure, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And they weren't feeling well physically, and they had, you know, they're going to have to go in the hospital. And they wondered why their fucking bum kicked, you know. And you know, the answer that I have to that is, what the hell do you expect? You got all this shit coming down in your life, and you're scared to death. Fear, lack of faith. And lack of faith is rampant in this fellowship. This is, I think, the hardest thing we have to deal with. And it takes a long fucking time, you know. If there's one thing I want out of this program now, you know, I've gotten a lot of the bullshit things. I've been married for 9 years, had the same job for 10 years. I own a home, I have 2 cars, you know, I have a lot of bullshit, right? If there's one thing I want out of this program, is enough faith to work the third step better than I do today. That's really all I want anymore. Because I honestly believe that if I have enough faith to turn my will and my life over, I don't have to feel the fear like I used to have to feel it, like I have to feel it today. I don't have to be afraid. I don't have to get off into the insanity if I can really turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And it's hard, and I can't do it very good. And that's really the main thing I've been talking about lately. Lack of faith. And I found a little bit, and I found out some of the payoffs, you know. I got all those things. I also got a little bit of freedom, and I think that's the promise. In AA, they got pages and pages and pages of promises, or lines and lines and lines of promises. They're all freedom. You know, first of all, freedom from the drugs. And second of all, slowly, and a little bit of time, freedom from self. And that's where I'm at. And I've experienced a little bit of freedom. And there are even times occasionally when I'm not totally self-obsessed. And that's a miracle. And that's what it's all about for me today. Staying clean first. Because you see, if I ain't clean, all the rest is bullshit. You know, I have a disease that doesn't allow me to be a human being when I'm using. You know, doesn't allow me to use successfully. And if I'm loaded, there is no growth, there is no freedom, you know, there is no escape. You know, but clean, I have a chance. And the freedom's the payoff for me. And hey, I got a love affair going with this program. You know, I heard a guy say about 9 years ago that this whole thing might be a rib. Huh? All I got to say about that, it might be, man, the whole thing might be a rib. But I'm an addict. I used drugs daily for 15 years. I used anything and everything. I didn't think there was any recovery possible. You know, I just plain wanted to die. And today I've been clean for almost 9 years. And all I got to say about that, it might be, man, the whole thing might be a rip. But I'm an addict. I used drugs daily for 15 years. I used anything and everything. I didn't think there was any recovery possible. You know, I just plain wanted to die. And today I've been clean for almost 9 years. And my life is better than I've ever hoped it would be. I found it's okay to be clean. And I found out that world out there that was out to get me, you know, ain't out to get me. It ain't out to get me. You know, I've come to believe that my God doesn't put any shit in my life. And I'm good enough at that myself. And he don't have to put any shit in my life. And I'll stir it up regular just because I feels familiar. You know, my God doesn't have any bad out there for me. He only wants good for me. I create all my own pain. I create all my own bad. I create all my own insanity through lack of faith. And I'm glad to be here tonight. Thank you.